Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Kansas Briefing. This is your host, the Speaker Pro Tem of the Kansas House, Blake Carpenter. Today we're going to have Representative Ron Bryce of Coffeyville join us, and we're going to keep this to a single topic. Well, we're going to talk about his background a little bit, about what he did before he got to the legislature, but then we're really going to focus in on a singular topic, which is going to be the Born Alive bill that we just passed out this week, why it matters, and ultimately, you know, what the debate was on the floor and some of the moving stories that we ended up hearing, and one of them being from Representative Bryce himself. So, Ron, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Blake. It's great to be here.
Okay. So, what is your background? What did you do before you came to the legislature?
Well, I was a, still am, a practicing doctor. I grew up in Kansas, in Coffeyville, Kansas, and ended up going to residency and practicing medicine in Texas for several years before moving back to Kansas. And so my wife Lydia and I, we have four kids. We moved back to Coffeyville, Kansas, opened a coffee business, roasting coffee in Coffeyville.
That's got to be thriving.
Well, you know, when I moved to Texas for a while, people would ask, where are you from? I'd say Coffeyville, and everybody would say, oh, they must have good coffee. Well, at the time, it wasn't so much. And so we decided, well, we're going to promote our town, Coffeyville, and we're going to do it by having coffee and roasting coffee, making Coffeyville famous for coffee. So that's what we've been doing. We've been trying to do it as a community project to develop. You know, we've actually helped to raise money to fund restoration of a old theater, 100-year-old theater in Coffeyville. We've used it to try and inspire the elementary school students. There are many famous people who have come from Coffeyville, believe it or not, and we use the coffee company to promote their stories and promote notable things. I bet there's things in Coffeyville that you didn't even know happened.
Yeah, that's probably true, actually. So, I mean, like, I know that I see some bricks from time to time from Coffeyville, you know, in the town I grew up in, Halstead. I'm pretty sure we had some Coffeyville bricks.
You know, all over the country, When I travel, almost everywhere I go, I look around and I can find Coffeyville bricks, because at one point Coffeyville made 750,000 bricks a day and shipped them all over the country. So different things. One other thing, just as an example, I used to play basketball in high school, and I had a scholarship to play at the community college there. And one guy showed up to play on the community college team, and he was big and slow. And I thought, oh, this guy's not gonna be a basketball player, you know. And well, anyway, a few years later, I was in medical school. I turned on the television, and there he was, boxing Mike Tyson, knocked out Mike Tyson, Buster Douglas, world heavyweight boxing champ. I thought, well,
oh,
Buster,
wow.
You know, you're making Coffeyville proud. So a lot of those kind of people. So we try to promote these stories to the young people. Just want to inspire them that they can reach their God-given goals.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't matter necessarily where you come from. I mean, that's really the American dream. I mean, just because you're in some small town in the state of Kansas, out in what is relatively the middle of nowhere, which is kind of where I grew up. But I mean, it's one of those things that you can still become anything you want to be. And we see this time and time again. That's the great thing about the American dream.
Hey, I would just say, throwing in there, that what I'm doing here in the legislature is a little bit of that. I never thought I'd be able to work in this type of a grand building with all these notable people and all these causes, such as the pro-life cause. And, you know, doors opened up, and here I am, a freshman legislator, getting to carry a consequential bill that was the Born Alive Act.
So we're going to shift gears and start talking about the Born Alive Act. And so what's the foundation? What is the bill? What does it do?
I love this bill because, well, if you think about it, and I hate to even put it in these words, but if you are an abortion provider, you're an abortionist, a baby is born alive during the abortion, you only have three choices. You either take care of that baby as you would any other newborn baby, premature, most likely, perhaps even with medical problems. I know one born alive survivor who only has one arm because she lost an arm during the procedure. So you take care of that baby. Number two, you set the baby aside and hope that it dies of prematurity, as cruel as that sounds. But then the third is even crueler, and that is to actively take the life of the baby, as news reports, Dr. Gosnell type of things that we've heard over the years. I have had, when I was in medical training in Texas, I did have a case. Well, let me just say I had 27 cases over a three-year period that I was indirectly or directly involved with. 27 babies born alive during abortion. They were given birth certificates. One of them, I was directly involved in their care. I gave a birth certificate and death certificate. But it turns out when I was called to the code blue in the operating room, I didn't know it was a born alive infant in there. I just knew it was an operating case that must have gone horribly wrong. I was called for a code blue. I was expecting a heart attack or someone dying, that sort of thing. When I arrived, the surgeon was still gowned up and the nurses were there, and nobody seemed to be, usually in a code blue, people running around frantic and anxious. Everybody was just standing there and nobody wanted to talk to me. And I happened to notice the young lady who was the patient was on the table. She didn't seem in distress. And then I heard a cry. I heard a baby cry, and it was a premature male infant that was sitting on a metal table in the corner of the operating room. And within a couple seconds, I kind of put two and two together that this had been a botched abortion. And what they call the complication, which I wouldn't call it a complication, but there's a live newborn baby in the abortion room. So what does the abortionist do? Well, in this case, he set the baby aside, hoping it would just succumb because it was premature. After it kept crying, kept kicking, kept making noise, the nurses decide they'd have enough. And so they, against the abortionist's desires, they called a code blue, called me in there. So I took this baby, premature baby, it was about 21, 22 weeks along, took him to the neonatal intensive care unit, admitted him. And I really had mixed feelings about this child because I knew there was basically zero chance he was going to survive. But what do you do when you have a 22-week infant? And so I did everything I could to comfort the baby. And about 24 hours later, the baby did die. I pronounced the baby dead. But this event really turned me from being a nominal pro-life person to being a real pro-life person, because I saw that the abortion issue is not just a woman and her doctor. There's another person involved. There's the baby, and this baby was very real. This baby is, of course, he's dead now, but I always thought that short 24-hour life might have a meaning someday. I just always kept thinking about him over the years since my residency and talking to my wife occasionally about it. And I thought, man, I would just wish that little guy's life could somehow have some meaning. And I believe maybe in some way being able to tell that story during this Born Alive Act testimony might just give some meaning to his short life.
Well, I mean, I know that's a hard story for you to share, and I appreciate you sharing that with us. And as we, so you're coming from it from that standpoint, which, you know, that gives you real life experience with this issue. But yesterday we ended up having a number of people come down to the House floor and argue against this legislation, saying, you know, that it's not needed, or that, you know, we're making doctors into criminals. What would you say to counter those types of arguments that we heard yesterday on the floor?
There were a lot of arguments that I have a hard time wrapping my mind around. We just have to defend against those arguments. A lot of them don't hold water, I don't believe. One of them that I heard from another representative was that we're hindering abortionists from doing their job. And that's why he couldn't support the bill. I would say, well, as a medical doctor, let's say I'm taking an appendix out. I'm taking your appendix out and you start hemorrhaging. I take care of the complication, the hemorrhaging. That doesn't hinder me from having the ability to do my job and take out your appendix. And it's the same thing. The newborn baby, the complication of an abortion, needs to be taken care of appropriately, morally, under medical ethics. That doesn't even one thing about this bill that I kept emphasizing, this is really not an abortion bill because it doesn't restrict abortion, doesn't regulate abortion, doesn't define abortion. This is all just picking up the messy aftermath after the abortion's already done. So it doesn't hinder anything in this bill. As much as I would want to restrict abortion, this does not restrict abortion. It just cleans up the aftermath of a so-called botched abortion. And Blake, if you have, I can't emphasize enough, if you have a living baby in your arms crying, to take the life of that baby or to set the baby aside to die goes against everything that's in me as a man, wanting to care for children, wanting to care for my family, wanting to care for those who are powerless, those who are completely innocent. Can you think of any more innocent, more powerless person in the whole world than a newborn baby? And to tell people that baby does not deserve to live, or even to these abortion survivors, some I believe were in-house yesterday, some were watching online. These are hundreds of people across the nation who have survived abortions. By voting no on that bill, we are telling them their life was really not protected, and it was not worth protecting. And I try not to be emotional, but when I heard the no votes on the voice vote, it almost cut me to the heart because I just can't understand the mindset. So yes, there are people who have opposition to this sort of thing. It's difficult for me to wrap my mind around how they're thinking, and I'm just trying to be blunt and open about it.
No, and I think to the points that you're making, I first of all couldn't explain it or articulate nearly as well as you just did. But I think the vast majority on both sides of the aisle would sympathize with what you just said, in the sense that if a baby is born and they are alive, they are squirming, they are crying, that baby is not dead. And why would we not provide the same standard of care that we would any other person out there, whether they're in a car crash or something else? This is a person, they're living, they're breathing. Why are we not going to help them and provide that care? So I think that this is, you're right, it's a moral question, it's a humanity question, but really, I mean, with those doctors, and I'm not a doctor myself, but I've heard of a thing called the Hippocratic Oath, do no harm. And so if doctors, these abortionists, are putting these babies onto metal tables and wheeling them into the corners of rooms to let them expire and die, are they then not fulfilling their oath?
Right, Blake. And I guess some people don't realize, but the Hippocratic Oath went by the wayside several years ago because the Hippocratic Oath says, I will do no abortion, basically interpreted, I will give no abortifacients, or in other words, will not give a woman anything that aborts her baby. And several years ago, almost all the medical schools dropped it, and they have adopted their more woke, I would say, oath that they are dedicated to environment and social justice and so forth. That's very, very sad for me because I believe as a medical doctor, my first priority is the care of my patients, and that's why we're a profession. We give our lives, we give our time to help others. And it's very difficult. And I you said something that made me remember, in hindsight I wish I had brought up a little more strongly on the floor debate yesterday, and that is, these babies have birth certificates. Okay, there's a legal argument that if you have a living, breathing person with a birth certificate and you don't provide care for them, or you, God forbid, actively kill them, there are, I would say, criminal penalties much worse than what we're trying to place on the abortionists in this bill. But it's just beyond me how people can think these things and argue against, but these are some of the arguments that we do here.
Yeah, and like I said, I think the vast majority of Americans, whether they're on the left or on the right, can see this issue and say, you know, okay, that's kind of extreme, that the baby's born, they have birth certificates, and yet we're going to allow folks to still either actively kill or not actively kill them, but basically make it to where they don't have a heat lamp or whatever else. And so I think that that's, I think to a lot of the American public, or at least Kansans in general, I would imagine that they would support this and agree with us. And I am glad that we did have some of our Democratic colleagues come on and support this, because they even saw that this is an issue. You know, these are living, breathing humans that are, that deserve the care. And when they're born, you know, cause okay, the mother didn't want them, but they are now born. And so now we have to take care of them.
Right. I don't want to be too negative and emphasize the arguments against what we did. We got the bill passed, and it's a bipartisan bill, and we'll send it to the governor and let her deal with it as she sees fit. But I am encouraged, because we do have a moral compass. We are doing things here at the State House that I think Kansans can be proud of. And it's just been such an encouragement for me. Blake, actually, when I first started getting into politics, which was about 1 year ago today, I hate to say this, but I had never even been to Topeka. I visited the State House about a year ago, went up to the dome with a couple of the representatives, and I didn't know what I was doing running for office, but I thought, this is my duty. I'm retiring as a doctor. I'm trying to do something good in Southeast Kansas. I'm going to just see if I can get involved in politics. And so I thought it would be such a drudgery. I thought, you know, going door to door all summer, 100 degree heat, you know, I thought, man, that's going to be a bummer. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. It has not been a drudgery. And when I got here and I met the people in the legislature, the people who assist us and are alongside us here in the legislature, and see the issues that we're working on, the coalitions being built, I have made so many friends in the legislature. And I just want to be very positive in that a lot of these issues, we're dealing with things like abortion and life and death, and you think they're very intense. But on the other side, we are building relationships. We are building the relationships with our constituents, with other legislators. And that's been, I think, the most rewarding thing for me, is just being able to connect with people like that.
You know, you're bringing up something that I have had conversations with constituents and others about in the past, which is there's been people who have left the chamber. They've since moved on. They decided that they didn't want to rerun. But they've indicated to me that the hardest thing about leaving the legislature is the people. And that when they leave, it's almost like they're leaving a family. You know, it's a very dysfunctional family, but a family nonetheless. Because, you know, no other job, I would argue, well, maybe there's some special ones out there, but in the majority of jobs, most people will go home to their families at night, and they do their 9 to 5, and they call it a day. Here in the legislature, we start at 7 in the morning. We go until late at night. We all live up here with each other, like, you know, almost in dorm room style. In some instances, dorm room style type accommodations at apartment complexes and everywhere else. And some people live in houses with other legislators. And it's one of those things that you end up establishing these bonds with your colleagues that normal people don't typically tend to establish, because we're living with each other like 24/7. We don't actually go home to our families unless they live like right next, like here in Topeka or relatively close. And so it's those types of relationships that I think make it very difficult for people to want to leave, because it is, even on both Republican and Democrat side, yeah, we'll throw our spears at each other on the House floor. But at the end of the day, this is what people don't see. They don't see us, you know, okay, well, we're going to go to a reception. We have constituents at these various association receptions. And, you know, maybe I'll see a Democrat there and I'm working on another issue. And I got to go talk to him and say, hey, you know, here's the issue I'm working on, and so on and so forth. We can, you know, have a drink together. And it's one of those things that, okay, we had our battle today, but, you know, let's move forward and let's figure out where else we can also have these conversations.
Right. It's very, very rewarding. And just kind of a funny thing one of the legislators told me is working at the State House is kind of like being on a cruise ship, because we eat everywhere we go, and we just keep running into the same people. So yep. But the food, you know, there is food, you know, snacks, different lunch meetings. But that is very true. And one thing that I think constituents need to keep in mind is they can visit us here in the State House. I love to have people from my district come up and show them around and meet with them. Some of them stay for a session. And I think people need to take advantage of that. The State House itself is just so magnificent. There's a little museum in the basement, John Brown's sword and the sledgehammer the Republicans used to break down the door when they got locked out back 100 or so years ago. So I think it's a great place, especially for kids and school children. And I would just encourage constituents to come visit.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have paging opportunities. If you know somebody in college, we do intern opportunities. And so a lot of opportunities here in the legislature. So with that, Representative, do you have anything else that you want to touch on?
I just want to say thank you to everyone who allowed me, voted for me, or if you didn't vote for me. We're really doing some things up here I think we can be proud of and that our constituents can be proud of. And I appreciate the leadership of the party. And thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Kansas Briefing. And we'll catch you next time.